I've been all across this country. Okie dokie, folks,
and welcome to this week's episode of Monday Night Shaw. This week on the show, I have PWA referee, the Fitz, Fitzpatrick. Is that, that's your wrestling name, right?
Or your referee name? Michael the Fitz, Fitzpatrick.
Oh, okay. See, like, I mean, I know you sort of more so by your shoot name. I do know you as Fitzpatrick, but I wasn't sure if your first name was the same or whatnot. But how did you come up with that? And, like, what is the reasoning for a referee to have a kayfabe name?
So when I first got into the business, it was about 5 minutes before going out to referee my first match. Kurt Sorokin looked at me and he's like, "Pat, you're Irish, right?" I was like, "Yeah." He's like, "You're Michael Fitzpatrick. See you out there, kid."
Oh, okay.
So that's how I got that. And then the Fitz part, where everybody just calls me Fitz or Fitzy, that actually came from Sheik Shabazz himself, gave me the nickname the Fitz.
Awesome. Okay, cool. So it's not something that you came up with yourself. It was more so bestowed upon you. How do you feel like about it? Like, are you happy that you've spent the last, like you told me the other day, you had been refereeing for 20 years, which I think is amazing and we will get into, but like you spent 20 years using that name. Is there any regrets not just using your real name?
No, not really. That's just the way it was when I broke in, I guess. It's like nobody used their real name. It wasn't a popular thing at that time.
And
it was Kurt that gave it to me, so.
Yeah. I mean, I can totally see just like, you know, I mean, Kurt's a promoter and a booker and stuff, so obviously he has a affinity for creating characters and stuff, so the more that he gets to do that, I'm sure that the happier he is, you know?
Yes, and for the first couple years of my career, I always used to hear, if Michael Fitzpatrick, does Patrick fit Michael? Drove me nuts after like the 800th time of listening to that. Well, now everybody just calls me Fitz or Fitzy or whatever.
Yeah, 100%, bud. So let's get into it. I mean, you did mention to me you started 20 years ago. So like, was that in the year 2000? Is that when you ref your first match?
Yeah, I probably would have been the end or beginning of 2000. It would be the end of 2000, maybe the beginning of 2001.
Okay.
So. Which was my first match, I believe, I refereed.
And so how did you get into refereeing? Like, what got you into, like, wrestling in general?
Well, wrestling, since I was a little kid, like most of us, my grandfather's idea of babysitting was me on his lap, a case of beer at his side, and Stampede Wrestling on the TV. So that was probably my first memories ever of wrestling. And then how I got into the business, because I never thought I was going to be in the business. I'm a small guy. But how I got into the business was I frequented a coffee shop that Kurt and Tex Gaines also often
this is amazing.
Went to.
I'm sorry. Just like, this is a sitcom in the making. You know, there's a coffee shop there and, you know, off in the corners, Kurt Sorokin and Tex Gaines planning their upcoming cards and stuff, like,
and yeah, they just used to see me there all the time, and we just started talking to them about wrestling and stuff, and you know, then they're like, "Oh, you should come and train with us at the building one time," and I was like, "Okay." I didn't know if I believed them or not right off the bat until I actually walked into the building, and lo and behold, there was a wrestling ring, and so I trained for a little bit, and then it was right after the PWA's Shaw Conference debut.
Okay.
The show they did at the Shaw Conference. I think it was a year after that. Their first show is going to be Festival Place in Short Park. That's where I refereed my very first pro wrestling match.
Do you remember who?
I don't remember who it was. No.
Do you?
You know what I remember from those days? I remember Sergeant Hazard. Worked as Axel Foley, Axel Rotten, Axel something that night. Axel Schultz. Sorry.
Okay.
There's so many Axels.
I was going to say Axel Rotten, I'm pretty sure, is a different guy completely.
Yeah, that's that ECW guy.
Yeah.
Axel Schultz, and he wrestled Marky Mark.
Oh, okay.
And I remember that from the festival place. I remember I took my first referee bump ever from Dirty Duke Durango, which is he squished me in the corner.
How did that feel?
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Durango.
It wasn't a big deal because you obviously had been training to wrestle. So
right.
How long did your wrestling training go, and what led you to decide that refereeing was the path for you rather than donning the tights and competing?
Wrestling training probably lasted a few months, like 6 to 8-ish months, maybe.
Oh, okay, so you must have all the skills to put together like a full match and stuff then.
Maybe when I was much younger and more spry. Not anymore, man. I'm getting too old for that stuff. Refereeing's rough some nights. I think my biggest thing was why I never became a wrestler is because apparently I was such a great referee that it was hard to replace me, especially back then where it wasn't a lot of people. You know, it was a lot harder to get into the business than it is now. And it was a lot harder to replace me back then. So, and I was apparently a pretty good referee because everybody used to say it. And I think I was just too good for my own good. So that's why I never got into the actual wrestling part of it.
Yeah. And and you were cool with that? Like, were you like disappointed that you didn't get to actually wrestle or?
There's a part of me, maybe the entertainer in me was maybe a little bit disappointed, but the as a person, not really, because you know what, I'm okay. I mean, I got enough aches and bruises and sore joints and stuff like that. I don't need to add to that.
Oh, that's fair. I mean, that's kind of a day, like a weekly thing in the life of a wrestler. It's like every time,
absolutely.
Even weekly, but like literally every time you step out of the ring, if you like know what you're doing, you're going to have a few aches and pains, you know. There should be some hurt involved, you know. Hopefully, like, I always like to say that, like, it's cool to hurt people, but don't injure anyone, you know. Like, there's a difference between being hurt and being injured, and like,
in the wrestling business, there really is.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. So Thaddeus was on my podcast pretty recently, and he kind of spilled the beans that Kurt Sorokin actually masked up there and joined in on one of the battle royals as a nightmare. Is that something that's you've ever done? Maybe that.
Are
you not allowed to talk about it?
No. I have never masked up as a nightmare. I did enter the Battle Royal once, what is the New Year's Resolution Battle Royal once, which I believe you can check out on the PWA YouTube page. I think the Battle Royal that I enter is on there.
Solid. Do you know what year that was?
2019.
Oh, okay. So is that the one that Zoe won?
No, I think she won 2020, didn't she?
Oh, okay. I'm not sure.
The one just before we shut down? I'm not sure either. I have the worst memory for that stuff. Honestly, man, I have no clue.
Yeah, and
it might have been.
I'm not super up to date on like my PWA knowledge just because like... You know, like I work for the other company and whatnot, and I've only been to a few of your guys' shows, but I always do enjoy it when I get to come out there. I mean, there's some spectacular wrestlers there. No doubt about that.
You know what? It might have been the one where Marky actually disguised himself as a nightmare and won the Battle Royal and then revealed himself at the end of it.
That's a fantastic angle too. I would love to see that. That's really good. I mean,
it's on the YouTube page, I'm pretty sure.
Awesome. Well, we will check that out. Do you know what the actual YouTube is called or whatever so that people can look it up, or should you just look
up Prairie
Wrestling?
I think it's PWA Wrestling CA is the name of the YouTube page.
Okay, solid.
I believe so.
And there's probably more than just that Rumble match on there. There's probably lots of great matches, eh?
Oh, I'm sure there is. Boris looks after it, so yeah, of course. He's going to pick good matches to put on the YouTube page.
Yeah, Boris is on the ball. I'm really happy for Boris that he's got his own podcast going on right now. I mean, I'm also like sure he's getting like way bigger numbers than I am. So congratulations to Boris. I'm very happy for him.
I think that's the next one I'm doing, actually, is Boris.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I want to do, like, a crossover gimmick with him, so that maybe, like, I'll come on his or he can come on mine. I'm sure he's got lots to talk about. Like, he's been commentating for a while, and I'm sure he's been in the ring a time or two.
Oh, he used to manage in the PWA. He was a manager. He managed Tex Gaines.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's a lot to manage.
Yeah, it is.
I like Tex Gaines. I wish I got to see him more. Since the Force Wrestling Academy like thing shut down, I haven't had a chance to talk to him that much. Every once in a while, shoot him a message over on the Facebook and stuff. But yeah, I haven't seen him in a Coon's age. So
yeah, Tex is great. He's one of the guys who taught me the business, taught me how to wrestle. So him, Red Thunder, Yates. They taught me a lot in the business, like a lot of the in-ring stuff.
Yeah. So is PWA the only promotion you've refereed for?
Besides the Clandestine Society, yes.
Oh, okay. Right on. And how did you get involved with the Clandestine Society? Was it just like Michael asked you to be a part of it?
Pretty much.
Right on.
It's that simple.
I am kind of familiar with the Clandestine Society. I was there at their first act for sure. And by the time this comes out, I mean, it'll already be revealed that I was part of the third act too. So, I mean, I was really happy. I know you reffed a couple of the matches I was involved in. So thank you very much for doing that.
That's my job, man.
Yeah. What was when you first started refereeing? I'm sure, like being with PWA, who is quite well known for bringing in a lot of name wrestlers and stuff. What was the first big name wrestler that you got to ref for?
Oh, the first big name wrestler I refereed. I think it might have been actually Jim the Anvil Neidhart.
Oh, okay.
And I think it might have been when him and Natty teamed up one of the first times.
Well, like Natty spent time in PWA before she went to WWE, didn't she?
Yep. Natty, TJ, Harry, all three of them.
Yeah, Teddy's done some stuff there, you know?
Teddy's done some stuff for us, Jinder Mahal.
Yeah, the PWA has like a rich history of guys that have like moved on to WWE for sure. I think even like Tyler Breeze maybe.
Tyler Breeze was there, yep.
Apocalypse, who went to become Rick Victor. Like,
yep.
There's a huge list of guys that have really gone on from PWA. I mean, there's some guys from RCW that have gone on as well, without a doubt. But like PWA has always been like sort of the premier wrestling federation here in Alberta.
What's the newest one? Tony Gill?
Tony
on
Gill,
NXT?
Yeah, that was Gershinder Singh. He's a good guy. I actually rode from Red Deer to Edmonton or Red Deer to Calgary with him one time. It was me, him, and Zach Mercury. Yeah, that was a interesting ride, but it's, you know, it's a fun story I have now because I'm like, oh, I rode with this guy that's now on the WWE. I did the same thing with one of the Bollywood boys. I gave a guy a ride from the hotel to the venue out in Victoria one time. And for a long time,
nice.
I was like, oh, yeah, I once picked up this guy in my really trashy, like, 1994, like, Toyota. And you know, the trunk was having issues working and I was super embarrassed.
Oh, yeah.
And now he's in the WWE.
That's okay. Feel better because I once drove Mick Foley from the airport to the hotel in a I think it was a 2000 Sunfire, which the front passenger seat was broken by Abyss. It didn't move anymore, and poor Mick didn't fit in the front. So he rode in the back seat, and his luggage rode in the front seat with me. It was quite the fiasco.
I mean, that's like amazing though, because like that's like kind of the opposite situation. Like when it was me and the Bollywood fellow, it was well before he ever went to WWE. What you're talking about is Mick Foley is probably like well after he's been in the WWE and probably used to like limo service and all kinds of stuff, you know?
Right, and I picked him up in a Sunfire.
But then again, like you read his book and stuff, he spent a lot of time sleeping in cars and whatnot back in when he was breaking in. So, you know, maybe it was a taste of the old times for him.
Well, he was fine. I mean, we had a great chat about Elvis and whatever. Like, we were talking about everything, and he was asking about what he was doing and the company and things. So it was like a great chat on the way, but it was just, I felt bad that he had to sit in the back seat.
Yeah, no, I totally hear you. Like, you definitely have a, even when it was like, just like, oh, I'm picking up this local indie fella and taking him. I wish my car was up to snuff here and that everybody could ride comfortably without having to worry about their luggage or whatnot.
To be fair, I don't think I was supposed to originally pick him up. I think it was Kurt that was supposed to pick him up.
Okay.
Because I was having breakfast with Al Snow, actually.
What was going on here that Al Snow and Mick Foley was this like some sort of big PWA? Like,
yeah, it was Night of Champions.
Okay, and both Mick were on the show, eh?
I believe Jay Lethal might have been on that show too, as well as the Beautiful People.
Wow, that was a
Angelina Love and Velvet Sky were there as well, I believe.
That's crazy.
And so I was having breakfast with Al Snow actually when I got the text from Kurt that said he couldn't make it to pick up Mick. Okay. So I had to go. I had to rush to the airport, and I was like 10 minutes late trying to find a parking spot.
Did Al go with you?
No, I asked him if he wanted to come with me, and he's like, no, I don't want to go.
I don't want to see Mick.
I'll see him later.
Oh, okay.
and I found Mick Foley in the line at Tim Hortons at the airport, confused by the loony and the toonie.
Oh, okay.
It's also the only guy I've ever picked up from the airport, too, that was recognized was Mick Foley. Nobody else has ever been really recognized that I've picked up. But I picked up AJ Styles, Christopher Daniels, Jay Lethal, Sean Spears, like so many of them, like guys that they, you know, they should know, but they didn't.
That's a crazy, like, cool opportunity in itself, you know, like. I think I'd be like really happy if Squig asked me to pick up like the name guys when they came in, because you could like just chat with them from the ride to from the airport to the building. I mean, don't get me wrong, you probably don't want to like bug them and pester them, but like if you do get to have a chat with somebody that's cool and they spread their knowledge to you and stuff, like that's really like valuable information and stuff and a valuable opportunity to have, you know.
I mostly when I picked them up, I don't even think I really talked wrestling with them a whole bunch. I think it's mostly just small talk and, you know, maybe what they're doing that day, if they want to stop anywhere or get anything. Like, it's never, I mean, there's a few of them that I've talked wrestling with, like Christopher Daniels likes to talk wrestling. Yeah, Frankie Kazarian loves to talk wrestling. Those guys I've really sat and listened to and talk. AJ Styles likes to talk wrestling, but AJ came to the PWA a few times, and after the first time it was more like just talking to an old friend after a while, because I was always the guy that usually picked him up and drove him back to the airport. So
Yeah, I mean, that's got to be like a nutty thing for you. Like, this guy that's world famous on TV, like, if he saw you just walking out and about, he'd probably be like, oh, there's the dude that picked me up from the airport. Hey, Fitz, how's it going?
Surprisingly, he had a really good memory, because I think there was like maybe a couple years in between times he came and he remembered who I was, like, right after, like, he walked right after me and he knew who I was to take him and drive him. So I was like, oh, that's kind of impressive, actually, because I don't know if I would have remembered me.
Yeah, did you end up refereeing those guys' matches?
I generally referee the names matches, depends. But just about every name I mentioned, I definitely refereed.
Okay.
Except for Mick. Mick came, and I believe Mick was the referee for what he was involved in.
Oh, okay. You picked him up and you're like, hey, you know, you're costing me some work tonight, Mick.
A little bit.
Oh, yeah. That's okay, though. You know, I mean, if it's Mick Foley, like, I'm sure.
Yeah, you can't argue with a legend.
Yeah, 100%. And like, yeah, that's where we'll leave that. I was going to say something like, oh, and I mean, it's Mick Foley, like, the people are going to pop way more for him than they would for me or for you. But like, let's not sell ourselves short.
Better anyway.
Yeah, hopefully they do. Like, but so we did mention that you did wrestling training and stuff, and that's how you kind of broke into refereeing and stuff. Was there a specific refereeing training that you had to undergo? Like, was there anyone that pulled you aside and said, this is how to referee a match?
Durango, Duke.
Okay.
Duke was probably one of the first guys to, well, Tex took me into the ring and just went over basic stuff, like, you know, get him out of the corners, keep him off the ropes, and, you know, count your fives and da 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 da. And I was like, okay, I know most of this just from watching it most of my life, or in my entire life watching wrestling. But Duke was probably one of the guys who pulled me aside and kind of started to smarten me up to the how important the referee can be in a match. And so I have him to probably thank for that. And I was just smart enough to shut my mouth and listen and learn. Like, that was probably the key, especially in that era. Like, just shut up, listen and learn. And that's pretty much what I did.
Yeah, that's still good advice, like, to this day, you know? Like, the people that are teaching you are going to know better. And I mean, I don't have a problem, like, trying to clarify something with someone. Like, if I'm training with Michael or Metal and they're showing me how to do something and I need, like, more specific information, I will ask and speak up at that point. But yeah, it's not like I'm going to be like, well, I'd rather do it like this, you know, like that's
right.
that's
right. There's a difference between trying to understand and then just being an asshole.
Yeah,
basically.
100%. 100%. I know, because like, I've actually refereed some matches and stuff myself. And that was a weird situation. Like, the first time it happened, I was announcing a show in Calgary for RCW, and one of our referees ended up having like a temper tantrum, freaking out, and going home. And so Squig approached me after like the second match and was like, "Kyle, one of our referees just pissed off. Can you take over and be a referee?" And I was like, "Well, I've never refereed before, but like, I'll give it the old college try if it's really like necessary." And he's like, "Yeah, okay, cool." And I was like, "But like, I've never done it before." And he's like, "You know the rules to wrestling. Go do it." And so I threw on an RCW t-shirt and, you know, I talked to the people that I was going to be refereeing. And yeah, it actually went pretty well, like, on the first night. I mean, there was a few things that were, you know, like, at one point I was doing a tag team match, which is a more complicated than a singles match to referee, for sure. And, you know, Bryce, the slammer, came in and he was like, "Hold me back, Kyle." And I was like, oh, the referees are not supposed to touch the wrestlers, right? And he's like, oh, fucking hold me back, Kyle. I was like, oh, okay, you know. So, like, there was a couple of little things like that, but overall, like, I thought it went pretty well. But I mean, I think that actual, like, being trained to be a referee could be super invaluable. Like, you know, when I see somebody like you and what you've been doing with, like, Clandestine Society and PWA as of recently, I mean, that work is much better than, you know, what I was doing, you know, when I was refereeing, or what other guys I've seen who are just kind of thrown into the role because
yeah,
we need somebody to do it. You know,
I guess I always offer the tutelage to the guys that are reffing with me, usually, because I've had so many guys, like Mo Jabrari was a referee at the PWA.
Really?
You know, I'd give him advice before he started wrestling as a ref. Just, you know, stuff that I would notice. And one of the big things to be a referee that I've learned is that if I, as a referee, don't believe what's going on in the ring, or at least try and project that I believe what's going on in the ring, mm-hmm. why should the fans believe what's going on in the ring? Because we're, as a referee, we're kind of the ones that are bringing the legitimacy to what's going on in the ring. Yeah. So we have to believe in it, and we have to take it seriously. And it should never be about me, the referee. It's got to be about what the two guys are doing in the ring and the story they're telling. And I think I've seen other referees in other companies where, you know, they'll be about themselves, or, you know, like they'll get their own gimmick, and they're like, that's not what it's about. You're there to be the legitimacy and the guy that's got to, you know, call it down the middle for the two guys in the ring to help them tell their story.
Yeah. You're like, I mean, I'm not trying to belittle you or make light of your responsibility or anything, but, like, the ideal referee is, like, an official assigned by the promotion to take care of the match, and is better when they blend in, like, as if they were part of the ring or part of, like, this.
You are not wrong. The best referees are the ones you barely notice.
Yeah. I mean, like,
until you need to be noticed.
There is a lot of, like, lots to, like, learn. What do you think is the most important aspect of being a referee?
I think it's two things. And the two things are, number one, I think it's really important to be able to pick up and understand the story that's being told so you can enhance that story.
Yeah.
The second would be to always check on the wrestlers. To make sure that they're okay.
Yeah.
So you know when to, and have the balls to say you're not going to continue anymore. You're injured, dude, and this is done for your health and safety, right? And I think those are probably, and then just, you know what? Like I said, shut your mouth and listen.
And
it's not.
I totally agree with everything you just said. I know that, like, I'm not trying to put myself over as a good referee or anything. I was, you know, mediocre, passable at best. But, like, those are things that didn't even occur to me. Like, there's literally, like, been, like, matches that are, you know, sometimes they're just, like, training matches and I'm just reffing because I'm there. And I remember one situation with B-Rat. He ended up, he did, like, this crazy thing where he jumped off the top rope to the floor and he, like, broke his ankle. And I was just standing there watching, like, oh, wow, that looked like it hurt. Are you going to keep going? Like, you know, I felt bad about it. Like, their medal was off there. Like, good God, ref, are you going to check on him? I was like, oh, yeah, I probably should do that. Like, you know, it's just like, unless you are a referee, these things don't really occur to you, you know. But I also, like, agree with everything you said about, you know, being in the moment and buying into what's going on, because, like, from the perspective as somebody that's an actual competitor, like, that's important advice for us as well. Like, don't get me wrong, that we know how to do the movements safely and perform without injuring each other and stuff, but there is times where it feels real, you know, and things feel.
It should, though.
Yeah, yeah, you know, and those are the best matches usually. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Like, it's almost like kind of being in an in between spot where you're so engulfed in what's going on and being in the moment and you're experiencing it like it's real, but at the same time you're kind of looking at it and still cognitively thinking, you know, this needs to be done, I gotta do this from bump safely, I gotta, you know, watch, you know, take care of each other, however it goes. It's a weird, like, I guess you really wouldn't understand it unless you actually been in the ring and wrestled a match that like you can't even explain how it.
And then
I mean, you and I get it because we've been in there.
Yeah.
But...
And even like that, there is like, there's completely different situations. Like sometimes I'll show up at the show and I will meticulously plan out every little movement in the match with the guy that we're going to do. And then sometimes I'll show up the show and I'll walk up to the guy I'm wrestling and he'll be like, yeah, I'll see you in the ring. And that's just what you got to do, right? Like, you just got to come up with it off the top of your head, and that can make it even more real. I mean, there's a lot of potential there for you know, things happening that maybe shouldn't happen because you're not prepared, but there's also a lot of potential for things happening that are cool little things that wouldn't have happened if you had prepared, you know?
That's almost a lot. Art form. I remember most of the matches when I first started weren't discussed. Everything was called in the ring, and you had to pay as a referee. You had to pay even more attention to stuff and be able to pick up on the storyline that's being told and being able to work with the guys in the ring without, you know, outwardly talking about it. So, I mean, times have changed.
100%. And I mean, even like as a wrestler, like if I am across the ring from somebody and I want to call a spot, there's a lot of times where I'll look at the ref and I'll be like, hey, go tell him da 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 da, you know? And don't get me wrong, I'm not the one that's usually calling spots or anything, but there's been a time or two where a situation happened and my opponent, we buggered something up and my opponent ended up like powdering out to the floor or whatever. And I, you know, I was in the moment, I was like, okay, well, I got to come up with something. So I just told the ref, okay, hey, tell him I'm going to spear him or whatever, you know? And then he walks over to the guy and he's like, hey, get back in the ring. 1, 2, 3. And then as the guy's getting in the ring, he's like, yeah, he's going to spear you, you know? So, like, the referee is a vital communication tool within the ring as well.
Can be, yeah. That's one of the ways it, definitely one of the things we have to watch for.
Is there any referees, perhaps, like, from major federations or anything that you've sought advice from or just basically have used as to pattern yourself after or just watched for... how they go about doing their thing to try and learn?
3, maybe 4. The big ones are Earl Hebner.
Okay. Yeah. Obviously like the most famous ref in the world. As far as I'm concerned.
Joey Morella.
Okay.
And Charles Robinson. The other one that I used to pay attention to, not so much as the other three, was Chioda, Chioda.
Solid. And have you ever had like correspondence with any of these guys? Like, have you ever talked to them? Like, hey, I'm a ref. Do you have any advice for me or anything? No.
No. I think the only one I've there's a few guys that I've asked advice from before. Lance Storm was one of those guys.
Oh yeah, yeah.
AJ Styles was the one that taught me that when I'm in that ring, I'm the boss. To not take shit from any wrestler, no matter who it is. Cause one time he made like he's gonna backhand me motion, and I played it up like, oh my god, I don't want to get backhanded. But I had, he came to me afterwards. He's like, don't ever do that. He's like, when I do that to you, you give me shit and you get right on my face and stand up, because you're the boss. Like, nobody's gonna take you seriously if you're constantly so we cowering and backing down, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, that makes you kind of partial. If you're afraid to get that AJ Styles is going to beat you up if you don't, like, award him the match, then, you know.
Right.
You're biased, yeah,
but he,
right?
He sat there and gave me that advice, and I was like, oh, I guess that makes perfect sense. I mean, I was just playing it up because you're AJ Styles. He's like, it doesn't matter who the hell's in the ring with you. He's like, I don't care who's in the ring with you. You get right back in there. I'm like, okay, cool. And from that day forward, I did exactly what AJ Styles suggested.
Well, I mean, I think taking AJ Styles' advice is a smart move.
Probably.
Yeah.
Considering he's probably the best pound-for-pound wrestler in the world right now.
100%. I'm
on TV. TV.
Well, I'm a huge fan of his, for sure. I mean, I've been watching a lot of Raws and SmackDowns lately, and I'm not super high on all the AJ Styles versus Elias matches and stuff like that. I'd rather see him in there with, like, you know, some more athletic AJ Styles type guys. But
yeah,
he always does bring it. Like, I've seen him I've never seen a bad AJ Styles match. You know,
No, he's like Michael. He could go in there, have a match with a broomstick, and it's probably going to be a main event at WrestleMania.
Yeah, I mean, MRB is another guy who's, like, fantastic. And, like, the thing I appreciate about MRB is, like, I talked to him, and he told me, like, when he first started wrestling, like, he couldn't do front rolls for, like, a bunch of, like, months and stuff. Like, he was kind of like a fat, chubby guy. And now he's killing it. And it's like that really is, like, quite inspiring to me. The fact that everything he's achieved is just from his own effort and hard work.
When I first met Michael, I think he was 16.
Okay.
Like, I don't even think he shaved yet.
Do you have any, like, young Michael stories for us?
Yeah. Here's it.
Let's not get too salacious. I don't want to get, like, a scolding or talking to you or anything.
It's not salacious at all. And he'll be the first to probably tell you that I think he used to get a lecture just about every show. When he first started, I'm pretty sure some vet in the locker room pulled him aside and told him he had to stop doing all that crazy shit because his career wasn't going to last very long. Hmm. I think even Mick Foley might have given him this advice as a young Michael, well, after watching his match. Because I believe he took the 187 from Homicide once too, that nobody else wanted to take. But, you know, Michael,
like, the vertebraker type thing.
Yeah, and a lot of people never wanted to take that, and I think Homicide was super impressed that Michael was like, yeah, whatever. Because the kid was, hey, he's always had that mentality. I think he's probably a lot smarter now. Well, I think he just does less now.
Yeah.
Of the crazy stuff that he used to do. But man, there was times when, like, I legitimately, him, Marky Mark, a lot of the times, Phoenix Taylor, those guys, like, I probably have a really good heart because of those guys, because man, they used to make me so nervous and scared for them sometimes, of the crap that they would try.
100%. I mean, they're all, like, fantastic. Even, like, everybody at the, like, Clandestine Society, it's just, like, they're all, like, crazy good. Everyone is just nutty. And, like, the thing about Michael is, like, yeah, he could do all those crazy, like, wacky high spots and extreme moves, but even all the basic stuff that he does is done better than anyone else I've ever been in the ring with.
Michael has definitely evolved into one of those great storytellers in a match, for sure. And it's kind of interesting to watch him be the 16-year-old daredevil and then make his way all the way up to what you see now. I wish everybody could have had the front row view to watch. And he's only going to go on and do even greater things.
Yeah. It would not surprise me at all if he ends up, you know, growing out of Alberta and ending up, like, on national television somewhere very soon.
He should be already.
Yeah, 100%.
Let's be real.
There's other people that I think have a good shot too. I'm betting that before soon, Zoe Sager will pop up somewhere on a national stage as well.
Oh, she's for
fantastic.
Sure.
And Mo
Not
Jabari.
To mention. Oh, yeah, definitely. Zoe, it's great because I don't think Zoe has any fear. Like, she does not care.
No.
And she will, and determination and drive to get where she wants to go. That's, man, that I've watched. She was like this shy little girl in the corner that was trained by Lance Storm. And then all of a sudden, she's just like one of the best probably female wrestlers on the independents here in Alberta anyway. I mean, I don't watch a lot of other independents, but oh, just to watch how far she's come and how hard she's worked, crazy.
Yeah, I saw
she deserves all the success she's going to get.
I saw her match with Metal from the Act 2 of Clandestine, and I walked up to her and I asked, I was like, that match with Metal was nuts. Like, that part where he gorilla press slammed you into the turnbuckle, I was like, did you know that was coming? And she was like, yeah, that was my idea. And I was like, oh my God, like, are you nuts? Are you crazy? Like, what are you doing? But, you know, like, the fact that she pitched this idea, had the commitment to go through with the idea, continued wrestling after this happened to her, and like was obviously like okay. Like I give her all the credit in the world, and I'll tell you that every single time I've gone to Top Talent to train, Zoe's been there. So
right, that's what I mean. She works and works, and she lives, sleeps, eats, breathes wrestling. And she deserves everything she's going to get. Like, definitely her story needs to be out there, because I think it could be very inspiring to other little girls, especially the smaller ones, because Zoe's not huge. But, man, she's feisty. She will beat your ass if you're not careful. Like,
yeah. No, there's been times where I lock up with her and I'm like, whoa, okay, like we're really going for it right now. Okay, cool, you know.
Right, she don't mess around, and it's admirable, very much so. And Mo, I love Mo. When I take my, I go to Calgary every once in a while, just to visit Takeshi, usually Aiden Adams. Brody Malibu and Mo and BBD show up once in a while. Mo usually shows up, but BBD shows up once in a while, and just to visit the boys and, you know, laugh and catch up. And Mo has come so far. Like, I remember he used to just be a guy that came with Junior all the time to shows. Mm-hmm. And then he started reffing, and now look at him. Like, holy cow.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I can remember like doing some rides, like back and forth from like Red Deer to Calgary and Edmonton and stuff. When I like first, when I was like, you know, years ago with guys, and you know, Mo's name would come up, and they wouldn't always speak of him in like the greatest of lights, you know. But like now, he's like, I 100% like have utmost respect for Mo, because like, he's crazy. I had a training match with him, and it's like one of the best matches I've ever had. I wish it had been in front of people, you know?
Yeah. Mo, he worked for it, though. That's another guy that puts in the work, man. He's going to get somewhere just because he puts in the work, and he improves. Like, I think every time I see him, he just gets better.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's like that's something that everybody should take from this podcast, you know, is that message of hard work will get you where you want to go. And like,
absolutely,
I don't get me wrong, hard work can be daunting and overwhelming sometimes and whatnot, but sometimes all you have to do is like, what you have to do is boil it down, and instead of being like, oh, I have to do all this hard work, look at it like, all I have to do is this hard work, you know?
Just show up and do the work, man.
So it's a mindset thing. Yes, 100%. Just show up, do the work. Like, I know when I've gone to training and stuff, and we go through some, like, crazy blow-up drills at the beginning, I'm always like, just keep going. Let's get through this. I know, like, okay, this is going to be the worst part of my day, but once it's over, I'm going to feel pretty good because I conquered it, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So on the refereeing front, have you ever had like aspirations to perhaps move up and advance yourself? Like, have you ever like put your resume out to Ring of Honor, Impact Wrestling, or anything like that?
Nah. I don't know.
No,
nothing like that.
What about perhaps refereeing other sports? Have you ever like considered going into cage fighting or hockey or basketball? Or basketball is not a real sport. I'm sorry. You know what I mean.
I actually did look at becoming an MMA referee at one time. I was thinking I was gonna maybe try that out, but man, the training that goes into that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you have to be like a legitimate fighter to be an MMA referee. I could be wrong.
No, pretty much. Like, you have to at least understand, you know, the chokes, the holds, what they are, and, you know, when to stop it and muddy. Like, it's pretty in-depth to be an MMA referee. And then that's even worse because you got to go, you got to pass all the commission stuff. And, like, I was just like, that's just way too much.
And, I mean, there's a lot more. Like, if you bugger up a match in wrestling, like, okay, obviously some people might be unhappy with you. Like, you buggered up our match or whatever, you made a mistake. But, like, in MMA, like, I was talking to Magsy over on Love Wrestling before one of our recent broadcasts, and he was telling me about the fights that happened recently. And at one guy literally had his arm broken and was hanging out there, and the referee still didn't stop the fight. And it's like, that referee, like, I feel a lot of, like, animosity towards that situation. Because, like, if you're the referee and you're responsible, like, you're responsible for the safety of the fighters, you know? Like, if the homeboy's arm is hanging there, like, stop the fight. Somebody else has won. Like, that guy is not going to be able to, like, lock on any holds or hit anyone with his dangling, you know, arm. You know what I mean? So.
Agreed.
And I totally.
100%.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, like, what's his name? John McCarthy from UFC. I'm pretty sure, like, that guy's, like, a legit badass, too, and could, like...
He was a cop, and I think he has, like, a black belt in jiu-jitsu or something crazy like that.
Is there any matches that come to mind when you think of refereeing where you're like, oh, this match was a great display of solid refereeing? Do you watch matches and look for that kind of stuff?
Not really, because if it's a great match, then it was obviously a great referee, because you probably barely noticed the referee and you noticed everything going on in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you watch Steamboat, and can you even tell me who refereed Steamboat and Macho Man WrestleMania 3?
No, I have no idea.
But you remember Steamboat Macho Man from wrestling. It was Joey Morella, I believe. Mm-hmm. And you didn't even notice him. Until like the 800 falsies at the end, you really didn't notice him.
So would you say that it's fair to say that, like, a referee can't really contribute to a great match other than, like, just being not noticed, but can absolutely contribute to, like, a bad match by causing one, by becoming, like, too noticeable or buggering up and stuff?
Here's the thing. It's a referee contributes to the match by not being noticed until it's time to be noticed, because you need the referee to get those close, you know, the falsies and the close, you know, twos, but you don't want to interfere with what's going on in the ring and the story being told. By a referee being noticed and taking away from the story that's being told in the ring, it's just, number one, it's just unprofessional and disrespectful.
Yeah.
But number two, what are you trying to accomplish? Nobody pays to see the referee. They pay to see the wrestlers and, you know, the match that's going to take place. That's what they pay for. They don't pay to see the referee. Nobody pays to see the referee.
Yeah, I can totally, like, I can get with that too, because, like, even when I was ring announcing, you know, I like you, I would get a lot of comments like that I'm a good ring announcer. I have had people tell me, like, I'm a way better ring announcer than I am wrestler, and on one hand, I really appreciate those comments, but on the other hand, it's like, well, I want to be a wrestler because nobody is paying to come and watch the fucking ring announcer, you know? Like,
10-4, true story. Even when I get in the ring, sometimes I'll get a fitsy chance or whatever, and I'll acknowledge the crowd out of respect and thank you for noticing and respecting and everything. But you know what? It's not about me. It's about what's about to take place in the ring, right? And I always had that attitude, and I will always have that attitude.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, and even like, I think the master of achieving that balance would be like a guy like Earl Hebner, who, you know, I can remember moments of Earl Hebner where he, like, you know, somebody comes after him, like you said earlier, like Triple H will like bow up to him and shove him, and he'll just be like, nah, fuck you, pal, and he'll shove him back. And
yeah,
I've even seen him throw up the suck it and all kinds of stuff. But it's also like, he's playing his character so well and stuff, and it's like, it's clearly a designed moment. Like, he's not shooting that on Triple H.
At the same time, though, that's Triple H using the referee as a tool to get his story over, to get himself over as a heel, to get mm-hmm. that heat. Because that's the other thing that we help do, right? Is like, if the heel's being a bad guy, it doesn't mean anything if nobody's getting in his face telling him not to break the rules. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I mean, it doesn't mean anything. But if the referee's there getting in his face and, you know, getting more aggressive with him as he breaks more rules, then the crowd sees that and they're like, well, this guy's being a dick, and this poor ref's trying to get him to stop breaking the rules, but he's being a heel, you know, he's breaking the rules. Now we want to see the babyface kick his ass because the ref can't.
Yeah.
So that's the, you know what I mean? So it's like, it's storytelling. It's a tool. Yeah. We're a tool.
I mean, in a positive sense, we'll put it that way. I know, like, Charles, who referees for RCW, he seems to take a lot of pride in taking ref bumps. Is that something, like, if they come to you and they ask you to take a bump, is that something you're stoked to do? Or are you like, darn, I didn't want to take any bumps? Like, is that, like, how do you feel when those are proposed to you? Like,
hey, man, if it's going to further the story and that needs to be part of the story they need to tell, so be it. That's it. It's my job. It's what I'm there for. I'm not opposed to taking bumps, and I don't look forward to taking bumps. Who the hell does? Maybe some of you crazy bastards that wrestle, but I don't. But it doesn't, just because I'm not looking forward to taking a bump doesn't mean I won't take a bump. If the story calls for a bump, let's bump.
And how?
Like,
I don't think there
should be a sense of pride being, I mean, if you want to bump that much, go be a wrestler.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Okay. I mean, I'm not hating on Charles.
It's a ref bump. They're usually not that intricate.
No.
They're pretty easy.
I know that Charles has been like pretty gung ho about it though, and like there has been guys that are like, okay, you want to take bumps? Oh, I'll give you a fucking Death Valley driver tonight. And it's like, oh, okay. Like Charles told me, he's like, oh yeah, the Aussie legend. He gave me a Death Valley driver on top of heavy metal, and it really hurt. And I was like, well, yeah, like of course it did.
Yeah. See, like stuff. I mean. Like, it's just uncalled for stuff like that. Like, it's that to me, by trying to convince someone to bump you in a match, that's one of those things
it was Charles's idea. Like, it was proposed to him, but because he's like a gung ho guy, he was like, yeah, sweet, let's do it, you know? Like,
yeah. See, but having that reputation too, so it's going to be taken advantage of. It's the wrestling business. Of course it's going to be.
Mm-hmm. Like even when I was refereeing, there was one time where I got, beat up at the end of a match, you know, and I don't get me wrong. When I was refereeing, I had wrestling matches before that. So it wasn't like, oh, they're just beating up this poor guy that has no idea what he's doing. you know, I mean, I wasn't far from that at that point in time, but it also was like, you know, I felt comfortable with the bump, and it wasn't like a thing that was like proposed to me cold that I had no training. And I mean, it's this probably the same with you, because you have trained. So like, you're prepared to do that when asked and stuff.
Yeah. That's all you should have to be.
Mm-hmm.
If like I said, if it's what they need to get to get something over, or to further the story, or to tell the story in the match better for an angle, whatever. Of course, absolutely.
Can you give me like just like your top three matches, like three of your favorite matches that you've ever wrestled, or refereed? Excuse me.
Refereed.
Yeah.
Well, the first one that comes to mind is probably Marky Mark versus AJ Styles.
Yeah, that I can see being really good.
Another one that holds a very special place in my heart is the new Karachi Vice, which would be Gama Singh Jr. and Jinder Mahal,
okay.
Or as he was called then, Tiger Singh, versus the Funky Bunch, which was Marky Mark and Phoenix Taylor, and they had a ladder match.
Oh,
which is still probably one of my favorite ladder matches I've ever seen. And that even includes stuff in the WWE.
Yeah, there's been some crazy ladder matches. And did you referee Michael versus Teddy in the ladder match?
Yeah. No, I did not.
Because I know, like, refereeing a regular match where pinfalls are required and stuff is one thing, but, like, then refereeing a ladder match, which has a whole different set of rules, like, what goes into refereeing a match like that?
Making sure nobody gets severely injured.
Okay, so you're basically there to stop the match if somebody gets hurt?
And declare the winner when they grab whatever it is they're reaching for. It's an easy night at the office for me, generally. Probably not the wrestlers, though, with the bumps they take. And then a third favorite match of mine I've ever refereed is probably, hands down, MRB versus Cody Rhodes, number 3. The one that went to a time limit draw.
Okay, how many matches have MRB and Cody had?
Three.
So they've had like their like Punk Joe trilogy already.
They're yeah.
Nice.
And yeah, that was just, man. And then I mean, so many matches. I remember used to being the ref for TJ and Harry versus the Funky Bunch, which are probably up there in the top five of what I used to referee. And I remember, at times, the match was so damn good, and TJ, Harry, Mark, and Leo were so damn good that I'd forget I was the referee, and they'd go down for a pin and actually look up at me, and I'd be like, oh, yeah, I'm the ref, and then I had to go and count. But, man, those were some great matches. Yeah, like,
I don't feel bad about that. That has happened to me. That's even happened to me when I'm, like, in, like, tag team matches and six-man tags, and our opponents will do something really cool, and I'll be like, yeah, and then I'll be like, oh wait, no. You know, like,
but so I mean, I could go on, like Michael versus Samoa Joe. Actually, see, it's tough because there's so many, but one of the other ones that really, really, really sticks out is Michael versus Christopher Daniels in Calgary at a Night of Champions. And Michael basically had, I don't know if a lot of people know this, but Michael injured. It was when he first did his pec injury. And he basically only had the one arm to work with, mm-hmm. in that match. And if you can find that match, or if you own the DVD for that match, watch that match and tell me if you can tell that the kid only could use really one arm well. Like, he did all that, and it was probably one of the greatest matches in PWA. It's got to be up there.
I will have to take. I will definitely be taking a look at that. Especially, like, is that available on that PWA YouTube?
I don't think so. But if you talk to Boris, I bet you he has the DVD. He will sell you for. the workers' cost or whatever. Another one is Harry versus Chavo Guerrero.
Oh, okay.
That was a hell of a story, like, that they told in that ring.
Just all the names you're mentioning and all the talent you've been in the ring with, like, I'm pretty envious, dude. Like, that's awesome, man. Like, you must be, like, super proud.
Well, I look at it as I've had probably the best seat in the house for a lot of wrestling shows for the last 20 years. That's the way I kind of view it.
Yeah, you can't get much closer to the action than being between the ropes while the matches are going on, right?
Right, and it's amazing. Like, some days it's just like, whew, can't even believe I just did that.
The highest of highs.
The another big thing that stands out for me is counting three for Booker T's PWA title win.
I was not even aware Booker T was ever the PWA champion. That's awesome. How long did Booker T hold the belt for?
I believe it was for a few months.
Oh, wow. So this wasn't even like a situation where he beat somebody and then like a Money in the Bank came on and like by the end of the show,
PWA champ again. He came back and defended the title and lost, but he defended the title.
That's incredible. Wow. Right on. Well, we are kind of, we're getting close to the end here. So I'm going to have you plug your social media and stuff in just a second. But I did want to ask if you've heard anything on the PWA front about the possibility of them resuming shows.
I have not officially heard anything yet, no. I hope it's soon because, you know, I miss my wrestling family. I want to get back to my wrestling family and all the good folks at PWA and the fans. I miss the fans, of course. Mm-hmm.
Like I say, we are recording this on the 15th of June. So this weekend is actually going to be the first weekend with fans back for RCW. And I could not be more stoked about it, you know?
Yeah. Have a good show. Have a good show.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, like I say, this podcast won't be going up for a good three or four weeks here. So hopefully by then, everything that we've just done with Clandestine will be announced and whatnot. But like with the Clandestine and the RCW Uprising tapings, all like there's no fans, you know, and
yeah.
I mean, especially for like a guy like me who really like relies on crowd work during his matches.
Yep.
It's incredibly challenging to wrestle with no people there, you know, incredibly challenging. Clandestine was a little easier because there was some of the other wrestlers around cheering you on and whatnot and kind of keep the event lively. It's just like it's not the same as a building full of people. You know what I mean? And
yeah, absolutely.
I'm super super stoked for that to be going down and whatnot. So hopefully, by the time next week's podcast airs, we can talk about how that went and stuff right here on Backbreaker Media Network. Fitz, why don't you give the folks your social media information? Where can people follow along at you? If anyone's looking to book referees, where can they get a hold of you?
Let's see. Facebook.
If you're taking bookings.
I generally don't take bookings.
Everybody's got a price, though, so.
I probably don't. I don't think anything can make me take a booking and work somewhere else.
No?
I bleed PWA. Ask Steven. Ask Squig how many times he tried to come and get me to. I think, you know what, now that you mention it, I think I did agree as a favor to Marky Mark that as long as it wasn't in Edmonton or Calgary, I would come to RCW and referee one of his matches.
Okay. And I mean, I don't see anything wrong with that, to be honest. And I was more so talking about, like, you know, other like if CWE needed a guy like maybe in Saskatchewan or something, and they really needed a guy,
no,
maybe
they could throw. I'm not traveling.
No, not even for some like extra money.
No, I travel to Vegas once a year. That's about all the traveling I'm going to do. Maybe to Calgary.
When you go to Vegas, is that like a cauliflower alley thing? Do you go down to that or?
No, that's just, I've just gone to Vegas yearly for the last.
Just like to gamble?
No, I don't even gamble.
Oh, really?
Or drink. I just love Vegas. I love to eat and I love the weather. I love laying by the pool during the day and the weather. The weather's beautiful.
Do you take in restaurants while you're there?
No. But there is a local who, there's a local promotion that I might go check out next time I go. And also, I got to go have a beer.
Snake Pit is down there, Sim Bodhi's wrestling school.
I think there's that one, but there's another one. And I got to go have a wobbly pop with my good friend Jeff Cobb.
Oh, awesome. I did not know you were friends with Jeff Cobb. That's cool.
I picked him up from the airport and he said, next time I'm in Vegas, text him and give him a call. And then I did. And we've done it, I think, once already. So
that's awesome, buddy. I'm, you know, I'm very envious because I talked to Spencer Love from Love Wrestling and he told me he's going to Vegas for SummerSlam. And I was like, oh, if I had the cash,
is that,
I
would, that where
so
it is this year?
Yeah, apparently.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and a SummerSlam, that I can only imagine how cool it would be to be at a SummerSlam. Like, the only, I've been to WWE shows. Like, I've gone to, like, when they came to the Rogers Center recently, I think there was a match between, like, the Revival and Bobby Roode and his tag partner, which was really great. But, like, it's just non-televised stuff, right? The only time I think I ever went to a televised WWE show was a Raw in Vancouver. And it was before they did the Elimination Chamber at SummerSlam, because I remember there was another match was supposed to go down at that SummerSlam, and it was this show where Stone Cold Steve Austin came out and was like, nah, it's going to be an Elimination Chamber. I'm like, hell yeah, right? And, yeah.
But hey, you got to make a WrestleMania, Goose.
I would love to. I've been to
three WrestleManias.
Yeah. I mean, I would love to. And I mean, especially like now that I'm an actual wrestler, like there's a lot of peripheral shows that go on around WrestleMania. So I would definitely be like,
yeah.
Hey, I'm in town. Yep. If anyone wants me to wrestle, you know?
Yeah, could be a good time. Yeah, WrestleMania is a good time. If you're a wrestling fan, a lifelong, you gotta go to WrestleMania.
Yeah. So did we actually get to your Facebook stuff, or did I completely talk over you?
Yeah, we veered, but that's okay. Facebook, it's my real name, Patrick Madigan. I think Instagram, it's the same thing. It might be P Madigan. And Twitter, I think, is my real name as well. It's either P. Madigan or Patrick Madigan. One is something, I don't know. I try to answer if someone.
Yeah, if you want to talk to Fitz, go through to the Twitter and just start randomly contacting people named Patrick Madigan or P. Madigan, and eventually you'll come across them.
Eventually.
Awesome, possum, buddy.
Eventually.
Well, thank you so much for doing the podcast today. I really appreciate it. You had some great stories. I'm just going to generally ask, though, for do you have one more just like great story that you can tell before we get off here real briefly?
I don't know. You got to give me an angle. What kind of story?
Well, just give me your best picking a guy up from the airport story.
I already probably gave that one, and it was Mick.
Okay, give me your best. You're in the ring, and something goes down that maybe isn't supposed to happen, but y'all just make it work.
Okay, here's one. So it's Sergeant Hazard and Chip Worthington, and they were told to the finish was supposed to be a draw or what do you call a draw in wrestling lingo?
Like
Broadway.
Time limit Broadway?
It's supposed to be a Broadway. And neither one of them knew what a Broadway was.
Oh, okay.
I knew what a Broadway was, but they didn't know what a Broadway was. So I think Sarge basically sit out power bombed Worthington, and I was counting one, two, and I noticed Chip wasn't going to kick out, so I made it look like he did, which was the worst mistake in the business. But I was trying to save their ass.
What do you mean? Like you like physically like picked his shoulder up, or like because like the people aren't going to see the video, so you have to describe your physical like what happened.
Oh right, yeah. So I'm counting one, two, and then I just acted like he kicked out. I just threw up the big old like two.
Okay, yeah.
And he didn't move. It was the worst looking like bullshit ever. And Sarge looked at me. He's like, what are you doing? And I was like, it's a Broadway. And he's like, what? Like, it's a Broadway. And he looked at me again, confused, picked him up, sat out powerbomb. I was like, okay, whatever. One, two, three. We get to the back, and the booker's like, what the hell is that? I'm like, they don't know what a Broadway is. And I just kept walking. And then they got in shit because they didn't know what a Broadway was until it was finally explained to them after that match what a Broadway was. It was pretty funny.
But you'd think that they would ask or something. Like, if they didn't know, like, I mean, I can understand nobody wants to, like, look dumb and have to ask the promoter, like, oh, what do you mean by Broadway? But at the same time, like,
It's a funny story now, and yeah. I mean, Sarge was still pretty new. Chip Worthington was very new, so it was. I thought they knew what a Broadway was, but obviously they didn't know what a Broadway was.
So, yeah, something similar happened to me in a match one time. I was wrestling against Dead Zone, and 8 seconds in, I had him on the ground, and I pinned him. And, you know, this was definitely not the finish because, like I say, it was literally like 8 seconds into the match. So I cover him and Charles goes, one, two. Hey, like stalling. It's like, are you going to kick out, bud? Like, and so eventually he did and whatnot. But it was like we completely like lost the crowd. It was a real.
Oh, yeah.
Because they were all like, what the fuck? You know, like.
See, nowadays I know better. Like, not to, like, doesn't matter who's in the ring. Like, if you don't kick out, it's your problem.
You're enforcing the rules. And, like, yeah, if homeboy doesn't know what a Broadway is and decides to, like, pin the other guy and the other guy decides to get pinned, that's on the boys, not the ref, you know?
Right. So, right. I was trying to look out for them. It was early in my career, too. So, I was trying to, like, look out for them, but, yeah, it didn't work out.
Yeah,
that was a fun
100%. Nobody wants to be like, get backstage and be like, whoa, you're a dumbass. You don't know what a Broadway is. Like, nobody wants to like be in that confrontational situation. Of course.
Right.
So like, I get where you're coming from. But like, end of the day, like, I do think the right thing to do is just ref the match as a shoot. Yeah.
Yeah. Count three. Yeah. Now I wouldn't even bother making that mistake. But man. Back then, I was probably only my third, maybe fourth year in, I think. Not even.
Yeah.
Like, it was pretty early on.
I get it. And it's like, it's 100%. And, you know, even like if you were 3 years in, like on the indie level, you're probably still doing only like one or two shows a month, you know. So
I was probably only one show a month back then because I don't even think, because Stampede was running, so we didn't even do a Calgary show back then. It was just Edmonton we ran.
Okay, so it's like that's one of those weird wrestling things when people say, oh yeah, like whenever I tell anyone how long I've been wrestling, I always say, yeah, I've had my first match October 13th, 2018, but I've had 72 matches now, you know, like I right. give them an idea of like, you know, how long I've been wrestling. It's not really an accurate depiction. It's like, how many matches have you done is much more important than how long have you. But like, as a referee guy, like, I'm sure, like, I don't know, do you keep like a logbook of all the matches you've ever done? Probably not, right? Like, and
no, and for the first little bit, I think I was the only referee, so I would do every match, every show.
Oh, that's got to be tough.
I always used to joke back then that I was the toughest guy in the PWA because I take a ref bump, go to the back selling, come back out, all chipper, ready to go.
All right.
Referee the next match.
That's awesome. We're gonna sign off here. Thank you very much for doing the podcast. This has been Monday Night Shaw with me, Kyle Shaw, aka the Canadian Goose, honk honk honk, and Fitz the Iron Man Fitzpatrick, referee for PWA. Check him out as soon as PWA comes back, or once Clandestine Society is up on the YouTube again, because he does an excellent job. Fitz, thank you very much for joining the show today.
Oh, thank you, man. It was fun. Nova Scotia and New Brunswick, Quebec and Newfoundland.